welcome to the Hull Libraries podcast. In this episode, we had a conversation with Ruby and Sam, who together are local theatre company The Herd. They write and produce wonderful plays and immersive interactive theatre for young audiences both locally and nationally. As well as chatting about some of the amazing work they've done, we talked about learning as you go and learning from your mistakes, taking stock during lockdown, before they share some great advice for anyone starting out in a creative field. Be sure to check out their excellent website, theherdtheatre.co.uk, for some great examples of the imaginative and fun work they've produced. So snuggle down with a cuppa or stride out with your headphones and enjoy our chat with Ruby and Sam from The Herd.
Do you want to take the origin story, Sam?
Okay, I'll take the origin story. So The Herd Theatre, we're a Hull-based theatre company, and we make performance and do sort of workshops and activities for families, our audience of families, with a specific focus on really young audiences, so children under the age of 7. And we actually started, our origin story is thanks to Hull Libraries. Ruby and myself both worked as performers, and also I'm a writer and a musician, and Ruby's also a director, and we also worked with young people, and we were doing all that sorts of work sort of separately. And we saw this commission at the library was putting out to create a show that was touring to schools to promote reading as part of what was the Summer Reading Challenge sort of program that the library used to run a few years ago.
And they still run it.
But you run your own one now, don't you?
Yeah, we have done up until COVID, and then it kind of had to go back onto the reading agency one. So we do something every year, but yeah, we're back onto the Summer Reading Challenge, yeah. And that, for people that are listening, is kind of like a, what's the best way to describe it? It's a way of encouraging children to read over the summer holidays when they might kind of drop off reading if they're not at school. And it's to give a chance for children to come into the library and read books over the summer, and they get little gifts at the end, a medal and a certificate at the end. So that's what you started off with then?
Yeah, so it's a really great motivator for those kids. And another great thing that the library was doing back then was commissioning theatre companies to go into schools to do a show about it. So it was sort of often part of an assembly, but instead of just going in and talking about the programme, it was a little narrative piece of theatre that got the kids excited for the Summer Reading Challenge. And each year it was themed. So when we did it, there was it was Guinness World Record themed, and another year it was Roald Dahl themed. So we applied for that commission and we got it, which was great, which meant that we made a show that toured a lot of primary schools in Hull.
65 out of 72.
So we sort of went to every primary school in Hull with this this half an hour show that we together we wrote and we directed together, and we performed in, and we wrote the music, and we made the set, and we contacted all the schools, and we got lots of great support from the library. But it was very much us creating something from nothing, which was the first time we'd done that. And is it fair to say we were doing it something to do, and it was also a good job basically to have? We didn't have like further ambitions, like this is going to be the thing that we didn't,
we were sort of freelance artists, and we thought our sensibilities sort of suited the project. So it was like, oh, we'll get together and we'll do this one project, but we didn't think we'd set up a company. Well, that wasn't the plan.
Oh really?
No, I think we created a name just so it sounded more legit, to be honest. So we sounded more like, we made up, and at that point we had a different name. We were called Brooker Lily Theatre. Again, you can tell we just created it, which was just a word that my my nephew used to call my niece because she's called Lily. So it was like absolutely irrelevant to anyone else. And it wasn't like a, you know, really chosen name. It was just a fun word that we liked using.
Where did The Herd come from, the name for that? Who chose the name?
That was very planned. That was the opposite. We did that. We had quite a long time over that one, didn't we? It was like in 2017, we spent a good few, well, a long time. We'd been thinking about different ones, but then that one. And the reason that we changed The Herd, because then we knew about what we were about a lot more, and we knew, and it was much more. By that point, we'd started to, have a mission and have a purpose. And our whole, the idea was a pun on the idea of being heard and about like, involving young people in projects. So your voice is heard when you work with us. But then also we like the idea of like bringing young people together for experiences, whether that's a show or whether that's, over workshops and being involved directly in the making of a project that we create little herds. But it was a baptism of fire. We learned so much from doing that, because like Sam said, it was we weren't in hindsight stupid, like but as in just for everyone involved, it's just like, you know, it was backbreaking work because we were doing 4 shows a day. But we learned so much. And the next year we got Hull Truck involved and we had an external director, we had some producing support, it became a bit smoother and easier to manage. But the biggest thing we learned was about how to make theatre for children,
and also that we love doing that, because we both I'd worked with children before but not made theatre for them, and actually it was a really, really rewarding process. It really suited us as artists, the sort of stories that we want to tell. They're such a generous audience, such an honest audience. And so that sort of definitely planted a seed of like, okay, let's do this again. And then from then we started to make more shows and do projects, and that was actually really lovely about doing those library projects. And then we had a few other opportunities after that, which meant that we were making shows in quite quick succession, and those shows were being seen by hundreds and hundreds of children. And that's definitely the best way to learn, because you're working out what works, what doesn't work, and also you're just realizing that, you know, when it doesn't work, it doesn't matter that much, as opposed to, I think often what we had perhaps before we started this company is that thing of when you're a young artist, you're so scared about getting things wrong, you're so scared about making bad art, making
but
bad gonna, work, making
to.
Bad shows.
You have to make bad
But you just
stuff.
Have to. And when you do it, you realize, yeah, it's part of the process. And then the next one's a little bit better. And then hopefully the next one's a little bit better.
I guess if you're learning your craft, you've got to actually physically do it. And an audience in a school will be quite well behaved, won't they? And the teachers will be keeping an eye on them, and they've all got to sit in assembly. Very different to when you're doing one of your performances, maybe in a community centre, and all the families and parents are there. It's a completely different feel, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different feel. Also, but also depends on the school, because I think that sometimes there's the problem was another obstacle we had with school shows, which is where the teachers try and police the behaviour too much. Because you want them to like laugh and get involved and sing or do whatever they want when they want to, but we had a lot of sit down, they think that's great. We're like, no, that was really useful.
So you started off as Broccolily and developed into the hair for 2017, and you've done various projects. Where are you now? What's been going on? Well, obviously we've had COVID as well. So I wondered like how have you coped with that? What's been the impact? Have you got any projects set up or hoping to do?
Should we talk a little? So just before COVID in 2019, we had 2018, we made a show called Slime. The libraries are really great and they were produced from that project. And we created this show. It was our first show for younger children. So children aged 2 to 5. So Slime was is a show about a slug and a caterpillar, and they're sort of battling for a leaf that's just out of reach. And it's only got a handful of words in the show. It's mostly sort of non-verbal. We're inspired by things like Pingu and Shaun the Sheep. And it takes place in a immersive garden set, which is made entirely out of foam. So the audience sit in this sort of foamy garden, and then they watch this story happen. And then at the end of the show, they get the opportunity to explore the garden and play with a bit of slug's slime. So that was the first show that we made for that age group. And it was, we really loved it. And it was really fun. And it was actually, we did invite lots of schools in, but it was also a lot more families in. That thing of you saying, I was going and performing shows in community centers. We also really loved that thing of creating this experience that families experience together. Like, how do you get adults laughing and enjoying the work as much as the children? Thinking about that kind of like, what jokes and what stories are universal. It doesn't matter what age you are. And hopefully you can bring everyone in.
Suddenly it was the first show that started growing outside of where it was meant to end or meant to go to. Suddenly these little opportunities were emerging. And then we got the opportunity to take it to Edinburgh Festival. In 2019, which was, we've been separately as artists with other projects, hadn't we? But we hadn't been as a company before, which was, gave us that industry exposure from the theatre industry. So suddenly we had the opportunity to tour to lots of different venues around the UK. So we did like a northern tour, our first northern tour in
the autumn of 2019.
And then off the back of that, we built this really ambitious 2020 tour that was going all around the UK. And we had some amazing, we went to the South Bank Centre, but then obviously COVID. So that didn't happen. Yeah. Yeah, we were just one of rehearsals, weren't we, when the announcement was made.
Yeah, is so that just stopped. On hold then, or has it fallen through?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure like a lot of people, this year has been a sort of process of planning, replanning. Should we film it? Should we just cancel it and put our eggs in another basket? And we've actually got another couple of projects that were coming up, and we were sort of juggling all of those things together. But we do think that if the roadmap goes according to plan, that we're touring it in next spring now again.
Yeah, so it was a funny one. It was like suddenly we had quite a busy year plan, then suddenly everything got cancelled. But actually, I think in the long run, it's might have served us really well, because he did that thing where you after everyone's experienced this, where you have to zoom out, you know, where you have to hit your foot on the pedal and you just have to have this space to think about, okay, what's worked really well? What have we really enjoyed? Also, what have audiences really liked or wanted? And how can we kind of prioritize that stuff? So we created this tagline called Stories in Playful Spaces. That's come out of it. And Slime was we basically realized that Slime is like our flagship project, hasn't it, Sam? Like, there's just about the way that the space works, the way the audience interacts with the story in this immersive setting. We just think it's really got lots of potential for its young audiences. Like, the way children don't actually just watch a story, they can touch it, they can run around, they can become part of it.
So let's go back to the beginning and tell us about how you got started in this. What made you go into acting, performing? And then, Sam, you said that you're writing and musician as well. So who's going first? Tell me how you started.
we both came up through youth theatres.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah. Mine was at Hull Truck. My sister's also an actor. And Amy, I don't know where it came from Amy, because it wasn't in our family, or we didn't go to the theatre as a family. It wasn't something that I was around or saw, but my sister's 9 years older than me, and she was in Amdram and started being in shows at Hull Truck when I was just a young teenager. So I just sort of, I had that sort of role model in my life that I was like, oh, that's really, that looks really cool. That's the kind of what I would like to do. Because before that, I was quite a shy kid. I didn't do much outside of the house about in terms of like performing and things like that. And then I joined, I went to Ultra Youth Theatre, and that kind of very quickly, I was like, I am going to be an actor. That's it. And from when I was like 13, I was like, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. And you did youth theatre as well, didn't you? You're from, can I say? Sorry.
Yeah, you're let Sam speak.
Sorry, Sam.
I grew up in Southwest London, and I just went to like a local youth theatre around the corner from my house. I assume I must have expressed an interest in going to it, but for whatever reason, I ended up there. And I loved performing, I think less the sort of getting into character thing. I think just like a lot of people, it was just a really fun space. It's just like you played games and it was a safe social space, and you made each other laugh, you know, once a week. And that started on Saturday mornings, and then would be Tuesday nights as I got a bit older and stuff. So that was just, I think forever, that's just been the stuff that I'm interested in a kind of roundabout way. And then, like we said, at one point, both me and Ruby were performers. So we sort of pursued this performing, being actors kind of thing. But actually, if I look back, that was only quite a short period of my life where I was like, I definitely really want to be an actor. I think it's always been about making stuff, basically. Yeah, the writing and creating and, being part of a band when I was a kid was just the best thing in the world, because, like, you just met up with your friends and created something from nothing and then played out to a group of people who sometimes enjoyed it and sometimes didn't. I've always written songs and stuff to myself, but actually what's been really lovely about The Herd is it's given me, since not being in a band, which I stopped when I was sort of like 18, 19, music's just been a sort of personal thing. So what's been really nice about The Herd is we were suddenly like, oh, it'd be really cool to score this whole show and make a whole soundtrack for the show. Maybe I could give it a go. And I really enjoyed that. And since then, I've done music for all of
our shows. Yeah.
Also, because we soundtrack a lot of our shows, like a lot of the show, it's a lot of music. It's often like an hour of music, which is quite a lot of music to write. But yeah, I really enjoy it. It's ace.
Just just to go back to me. Sorry.
All right, Ruby, I was going to ask you.
No, so just what came up, you were saying about that thing about, like, obviously I said to you, I was like, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
But I think in reflection, so that was my goal, and I went to uni, then I went to drama school after uni, like, and I was like, I'm going to be an actor. But then, so it wasn't until actually, yeah, I was about 25 that I sort of went, wait a minute, what am I doing? I don't know, because I'd also just started doing directing and doing some other bits and bobs. Again, that kind of came out of like just like necessity, like let's get something on, let's do something so I can act. But realizing that now I was much better at the other end and enjoying it more. So I think that's something interesting as well, is like about how we talk about for theatre. It's always very much acting is the central thing, when actually there's so many other things.
And is that part of your course? Yeah. When you do these drama qualifications, does it look at every single angle, backstage performance, or do you have to really specify what you want to do?
Depends where you go completely. So yeah, mine was a very academic one, so we didn't do anything about the practical artists, like we didn't do anything practical about how you, so mine was just like looking at text and looking at plays and analyzing the thinking, but which has obviously been great for me now being a maker, that's been really useful. But no, there was no like hands-on, like give it a go, try these other things. And then so there are obviously lots of courses that would offer different, like actually experience practical stuff of being in different, making a set, yeah, being in different departments, but
yeah,
that wasn't my experience at all. I had to just learn by being in the real world,
because mm-hmm. now you're learning to run a business really as well, aren't you?
Well, that's another thing. Sense. No one tells you that stuff. But.
But that's actually also been ace. That's one of those things that, like, when you start, you're like, I wanted to work in the theatre so that I could go and play games in a room and make people laugh. And then you actually find, I mean, I think with the exception of maybe a couple of incredibly successful actors, like every single person who works in the industry has to do all of that stuff all the time. You have to generate your own ideas. You have to work.
You have to email people all your life, aren't you? That's the majority of things, make things happen is emailing. And it's like,
but I had a real turning point. I remember where I was like, I don't want to do this. This is boring. And then actually going, then at one point suddenly finding it interesting and realizing this is a lot of the work, and it's a good part of the work. You know, often by emailing people, you're designing projects. You're thinking creatively because you have to come up with projects, and all projects take administration. So I think, yeah, again, part of this year is also taking even more ownership of that stuff. Like, we are a company and we have to think about strategy and management mm-hmm. and all of that stuff, which when you're a bit younger can feel a bit scary, but actually it's really empowering to sort of hold on to that stuff and go, what do we want to do with that strategy and that management? Who do we want to reach? What kind of people do we want to work with? Who do we want the world, what do we want the world to see us as, sort of thing.
And do you want to focus on children, or do you want to branch out and look at like older, young people, adults? What's your future goals?
At the moment, we are really interested in that younger audience. Mm. Like we said, it sort of really suits us. And actually, I think me and Ruby as individuals would like that thing of getting better at something and getting sort of doing it as best as we can.
Yeah.
So if you do two shows for 2 to 5 year olds, that's one thing. But if you do 10, like by the end of that 10th, hopefully you're like, you're really good at that. So we're really interested in that. I think we'll always stay in the sort of young people, children, family world, as opposed to making theatre solely for adults. But as I was saying earlier, I think we are interested in that thing of a good show should be a good show for any age.
Yeah, totally.
So you know, as long as you're not exploring themes that are not appropriate for a young person or a child,
the art of it, the sort of the artistic choices you make are the same in any process. Mm-hmm. Like that, we're not like, in no way is it limited or focused, or you know, it's as vast and as complex and as difficult, yeah. as it is as if you're making work for a more cerebral adult audience.
But we've done lots of projects over the last few years, sort of workshops or schools projects with slightly older children.
And also, one thing we do want to continually be is responsive to young people. Like, the lives of young people change so much, the world, especially now, like the world has changed so much in the last 2 years, and so it's about always being responsive and listening to young people and helping, like them helping us figure out what's our next project and what kind of themes we might be exploring. And that's really important to us as well, to kind of stay in touch. And I think that's yeah, teenagers can offer this. There's just so much. I'm just so interested by the experience of being a young people right now, a young person right now, sorry. I think it's such a difficult but time, but also I've been, like we were talking about before we started this conversation, about how resilient your children have been, but also yeah, just that in itself, like
yeah, I think children are having to think about big stuff in a way that we didn't have to when we were kids.
Not at all. I didn't look beyond my nose. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Like friends at school, let's have a laugh. That's it.
But I think yeah, you hope the positive reading of that is that a lot of kids have been really negatively affected by this stuff, and you're sort of understanding that you're part of this bigger picture of society, and you're sort of having to do this thing that is not really like. You possibly don't have to stay home because you're probably not going to get ill because you're young, but you're doing it for other people, which I think is quite amazing. That.
So, is there anyone you would love to work with? If you could pick anything or do anything, who would you love to work with?
The answer that comes to me, which is not the most glamorous answer, but is I think... Our work basically is like audience focus. So we'll start with an idea of like, who do you want to reach with this piece? But yeah, I think it's more about like, protect groups of people that we have not worked with before or people are excited in. So it's not necessarily like famous people or people to far field. It's more like, where have we not, like, what have we not reached into or what areas have we not looked into? And
well, I'll add another non-specific but sort of general approach. That another thing that we love about theatre is it's such a magpie art form that you can kind of jam anything into it. You know, theatre can involve film, it can involve animation, it can involve music, and it can involve live music. It can involve so many different things. So I won't be specific, but I'm just excited by, working with different artists, with filmmakers.
Yeah, there's something about, and then they don't have to necessarily have loads of experience working with children. For example, another project we've got an idea about is like getting a visual artist to create a space for young people, and they don't need to have ever been a teacher or have done any, but you know, that's not what it's about. It's about like matching those two things. But no, I don't have like a list. I feel like we should go write one.
We're helping us
dream bigger.
Yeah,
some more company development here. We need to dream bigger.
I'm all about dreaming big.
Get those Hollywood stars to
be in Jennifer our shows. Hudson to sing on.
I was going to say who influenced you in your journey from the start, from when you got into theatre performing to now right across. Is there anyone that's really influenced you? Is it a teacher or someone you worked with?
I mean, so many people, literally, like Sam said, it's a magpie art form, like literally so many things, so many different people.
I think I've got one. When I went to youth theatre I mentioned before, there was one of the youth theatre facilitators, one of the workshop leaders, there was a guy called Ned who was everyone in the group loved, and he was really good at his job and it was great. And then actually I then went to university and then left university and then connected with him again and was like, I want to sort of do what you do and I want to work in theatre and I don't know what to do. And he was really useful. But at that point he was working for this company called Company 3, which are like they're basically a youth theatre based in London, but they have made shows that have been on the BBC. They've made shows that they make these shows and then sort of create scripts they send around the world and are made by youth theatres all over the world. They made one called the COVID Time Capsule. So like hundreds or thousands of young people around the world engaged in this in this project. That guy Ned was I think inspirational in that sort of that kind of like making arts at a community level and not necessarily being like aspirational that you want to go to Hollywood or you want to perform at the National Theatre in London, but that what you want to do is make really good are in your community, in the place where you live, with the young people there, is reaching all sorts of different kinds of people, but it can still have that kind of big ambitious reach and can still explore big ambitious themes. I think he was an inspiration.
In terms of theatre for young children, so slime, Tim Crouch, who's a theatre maker, writer, who's very established and brilliant and has done lots of amazing stuff for lots of years. He made a show at the Unicorn Theatre in London, Oh, I can't remember. It's something like Jeremy Uglemore and Hartleby. I might have got the names in the wrong order, but it was for 2 to 5 year olds. And it was this shirt, but it was about a day to the trip to the beach, but the characters, it was, so there's 3 characters each called Jeremy, Hartleby and Uglemore. And they're the only words they said in the show were their own names. So Jeremy would only say the word Jeremy. And then obviously Hartleby only say the word Hartleby. And it was just the most joyful, but really truthful. You didn't need the words. Basically, it was a really truthful exploration of like a family trip to the beach, but without any words. And it was also a clown. It's like told in clown performance style. So it was really responsive to its audience and really with its audience. But it was, just this unique thing. Like, it's like entering a new world with this new language, and it's like taking something quite every day and making it more joyful and magical. And I thought, and it was just brilliant to see. And the kids all sat at the shore of a beach, and a big beach ball came out, and everyone threw that around. So that was one, I think, just because obviously we become so focused on early years work, that was one show that just stuck out to me as like, that's something I would love to aspire to, that kind of work. And then I think that's like a sort of, you know, top of the game person. But then also I think the biggest influences for me, and if anyone happens to listen to this who wants to make art or make theatre, has been my peers. Like, I've grown so much and learned so much from the people who were close in age to me, and sort of figuring it out as well, or maybe a few years above me sort of figuring it out. In a way that, because you kind of go along a journey together, they kind of impact you and affect you, and those collaborations, at the time you don't really notice it because you're thinking about those big role models and you're thinking about the, you know, the trying to speak to or connect with the big people at the top. But actually the people who've really made a long lasting change and impact on me have been those collaborations. So I've got a friend, Sonia Jalali, who is a brilliant writer who's, we train together as well, but so she's like one of the biggest influences that I have on my taste, on my craft. But also I think there are also those people that you also do the chatting around the work with. They're like, why should we do this? How do we make theatre better? Like, why does it, you know, the people you sort of dismantle the current systems with, which is quite, I think also where there's like, you get loads out of that as well.
Good answer.
Yeah.
And to finish off, I just wondered what your advice would be to anyone that's starting out in this field. What kind of tips have you got that you look back and think, actually, that would have been really helpful if I'd known that at the start?
I think can I jump in with that first one, just based on what I just said, is that like, value your people, the people around you, like actually make really long last, make connections with and trust in the people close to you. Because I think, again, there's a sort of hierarchy sometimes, the sense of like, I need to be getting myself training with this person, I need to be seeing this thing, I need to be pursuing this goal. Actually, they've sustained me, and I've also learned the most from people who were kind of on the same level and going through it together. So I'd say, really be attentive to who's in your youth theatre, who else around you at uni, who do you already have that relationship with and who can start messing around with and thinking about making work together. Because I think, that has been sort of fundamental.
I think, I would jump in on that sort of same theme, is that when, I think it's quite easy when you leave college or you leave university and you're out into this world, to think about, you're really aspirational, which is good, and you want to work with the big people and you want to work in the big buildings and you want to get whatever it is, get on telly, work for this theatre or whatever. And sometimes, and I speak from my own experiences, like you're not as attentive to that situation and making the most of the situation. Mm. If you're just doing a small project with some friends, or you're doing a job for your local library, or you're doing a job in a community centre or in a school, I think it's unbelievable how often those things will, first of all, lead to other opportunities, but also change the way you look at the world and the way you want to make art and the way you want to make theatre. So I think if you're able to give all to every sort of artistic opportunity you have, then you will reap the rewards of that, as opposed to thinking that you're doing, you're doing this little project where you fill time to wait for the big stuff, because the big stuff doesn't come that way. The big stuff comes through.
And they are the big stuff in one way, aren't they?
Exactly.
They
totally big stuff are. Comes through you reframing what the big stuff is, basically, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing I would say, is reframe what the big stuff is. That, yeah, like, I think.
And I think that's in our culture, isn't it? I think our culture is so geared to be like, we want to be celebrities. We want to be, have 1 million followers. I don't want to be a celebrity, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's understandable why we think like that. But I think, being able to reframe that can be really helpful. And the earlier you can do that, then I think the more you get out of being an early career actor, early career director, artist, whatever.
And then one other thing I'd just say, if you're young and trying to be specifically as in theatre, like if you want a job in theatre, is there is annoyingly no path. Like, I think for ages I was like, I felt like slightly outside of something, and I felt like I was trying to get into something. And that's, I don't know the way, but it just feels like I need to get this job or that job. But actually, if you want to be an artist in theatre, there are not really any resident, there's no like theatre buildings where you will get a residency where you can, you know, just make work for that building. That is so rare. It's often free. It's freelance. Being an artist, it's being a freelancer. So just that you will, by you doing it and giving it a go, you are already on your path, if that makes sense. Like, you don't have to wait for someone else to come and give you permission and come around and give you a role. Actually, if you just are writing and enjoying that, then you're on your journey and you're doing it. And yeah, so yeah, that's something.
Thanks for listening. We're now available on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for Hull Libraries. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you can get all the latest episodes as soon as they're out. In the meantime, if you want to know more about some of the great services Hull Libraries offer, you can check out our website at hcndell.co.uk/libraries or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. See you next time.